This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Julian Ng and Kusu Chong with the top business stories of the day. First, a look at the Bank of England and its governor, Mark Carney, who's stepping down in June 2019, 2 years short of the usual 8 years that bank governors serve. So what is the story behind that? There's some talk about him meddling in politics.
Yeah, I think he weighed in on whether Brexit was a good thing or not. And a lot of politicians were unhappy with that because that's their domain, right? Politicians would tell people whether the UK should remain within the EU or not. But Mark Carney's duty is just to manage the monetary policy. And that's why he was so controversial. I guess there's also some film star attraction about him. He's very charismatic and he looks like George Clooney. So he's become
the
focus.
That would be a stretch. But he's got the white hair thing going.
The salt and pepper thing going.
Salt and pepper
thing. But okay, so is talking about responsibility and speaking responsibly, we see this in the FBI Clinton emails as well. Just coming out and stating the facts as they see it, is that the same as campaigning? So if Mark Carney says Brexit's a bad idea because of X, Y, and Z, is he campaigning for Remain, or is he just stating the facts as he sees it?
Well, the horse has left the stables, hasn't it? So he's got to deal with the detractors that comes along with it. And what we got from the economic standpoint is that the UK has just seen quite good performance from a GDP perspective in the latest quarter. He's also got to deal with, of course, the timetable that is on the cards for the British exit from the euro, I think 24 months. So all that's on his table. And if he leaves in 2019, he's got another 3 years to see this through. So he will go down in history as the central bank or the Bank of England governor to have seen the exit from the EU. So he's got a tricky road ahead for him. And as we speak now, there's all kinds of news narratives about whether British banks will stick within the UK, given London's status as the financial centre. He's also got to deal with the automakers and Nissan, I think, underlining the interest to stay in Scotland. So it's the path has only just begun. The struggle has only just begun. And of course, the Bank of England meets this week. So expect some narrative on the Brexit and the difficulties inherent as well.
Yeah, I think it's he has his work cut out for him. Just looking at his annual salary, that's about just under £500,000 a year, plus £145,000 in pension allowance. This is £175,000, a lot more than his predecessor, Sir Mervyn. And that's not counting the housing allowance of £250,000, £250,000 that Mark Carney has because he's Canadian. He's not British. And it's the first time in the Bank of England's 200 or 300-year history that they've hired a foreigner for the job. And at such a crucial time as well, because here is a foreigner that's going to steer the country and the country's monetary policy over Brexit. And which is why I think politicians are slightly dicey about this situation, right?
Well, you need some kind of dispassionate about this. And I remember when I used to work at Thomson Reuters and they hired Tom Gloser. He was the first non-Brit, non-journalist to head up Thomson Reuters. So sometimes that third-party impartiality is interesting. And of course, Mark Carney, also notable for his tenure as a former managing director of Goldman Sachs, having worked in London, Tokyo, and New London, Toronto, and New York.
Okay, so we do understand that he wasn't ever going to serve out those 8 years. He promised 5 years at the bank, at the helm of the Bank of England. And so this shortened tenure is slightly less than what he would have served anyway. But why announce it now? Why the necessity now? Is it to take off pressure from those who are calling for his resignation?
Yeah, I think to also establish some comfort about continuity, especially this crucial time about Brexit.
Okay, we're also going to be having at 9:30 or after the 9:30 news, rather, a program from the BBC where we explore the question of banking and the banking industry. For Britain, the British Bankers Association has warned that large banks are getting ready to relocate out of the UK early next year, in fact, and that smaller banks could move operations overseas even before then. So the Bankers Association has already come out with its prediction predictions of how the industry is going to be shaping up in the next couple of months?
Well, you might say that that transition has already happened in the past few years. You saw some years ago HSBC saying they're going to relocate the seats of the chief executive to China. So, I mean, that transition has been kind of like a, you know, has begun already. Maybe Brexit will accelerate it. But, you know, we've asked people this before. And there'll be maybe there'll be mini financial centres all over the world. And this is probably might be the way of the future. You don't have one seat of power in London anymore.
Okay, a CEO of Max Power, a power company controlled by Standard Chartered in Indonesia, is stepping down amidst a US Department of Justice probe into alleged misconduct at Max Power.
So at the heart of the controversy, apart from the fact that this is a majority owned by Standard Chartered, the bank, right? The bank as we know it, having established in Malaysia for, a century or so, they were trying to establish a bribery policy to get in contracts.
Yeah, they were trying to establish what? I mean, like an explicit
like
policy.
How to bribe government officials so that they could get contracts. And according to the website, they are supposedly the cleanest power company in the region, supplying clean power to countries like Indonesia and so on. And they're headquartered in Indonesia.
Is this just about the reality of doing business? I mean, some people say that, you know, if you're too clean, you're not going to get the job. And especially in emerging markets where things are still murky, regulations not established well, and in a politics and business kind of overlap.
You're seriously going to go with that tack?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm seeing that, you know, the businessman might say, well, that's the reality. They might not speak about it openly because of obviously the taint of promoting corruption. But maybe the reality for them is that's what you have to do. You're going to have to grease some palms. I mean, it's not saying that this is a good thing. It's just that, you know, we just had the news of the Panorama expose on Rolls-Royce and, you know, greasing palms in India for their, you know, Hawk. So engines, right? So is that the reality? Is Stanchart just reflecting that?
That could be the reality, I think, but we shouldn't go so far as to say that we should accept that kind of reality, because at the end of the day, this is about power, and it's about how cheaply power is going to be sold to people that need it most. And we've come a whole long way from, you know, established principles like antitrust principles, principles of consumer protection, you know, why we are against monopolistic predatory pricing. You know, we've established all these principles, and I think the next frontier is whether companies should be engaged in things like bribery. I think it's these things are very wrong, and I think this is also relevant for CGN, which we're going to talk about later, that's seeking some money from investors.
Okay, another story in our crosshairs. Japan's largest shipping firms are to merge their container operations, I guess, under pressure from the global economic downturn.
Also, the news has it that Nissan, Yusen, Mitsui, OSK, and Kawasaki Kisen Kaisha, they're going to merge because basically global trade has come to a grinding halt. If you look at the Baltic Dry Shipping Index, I mean, the prices there have been on a slump for the last, you know, number of years. And the issue really is you know, when economies start to slow down and production suffers, and basically you'll see this in industrial production figures and manufacturing figures, you know, less stuff is produced, and therefore less stuff ends up at ports and less stuff gets shipped to other parts of the world. And it all ends up, and that's why the Baltic Dry Shipping Index is a great forward indicator of where economic growth lies.
Yeah, exactly. And we also saw South Korea's Hanjin Shipping filing for bankruptcy recently. A string of merger over the last 2 years as a result of the kind of turbulence we see in the shipping sector. Costco and China Shipping Group merged their operations. And we also had France's CMA CGM, which is the world's third largest container operator, bought into Singapore's NOL. Things like Hapag-Lloyd merging with Dubai-based United Arab Shipping as well. These are the kinds of movements we see just for shipping companies to not necessarily expand the business, but really to save costs, right?
Strengthen,
to cut down costs and strengthen the balance sheet.
Strengthen numbers.
Right, so competitors become allies in this kind of grim economy, is it?
Yeah. You got to get together and, you know, merge and centralize costs and stuff like that.
Okay, we're going to have more top business news after this at BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.